the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. Ian Geist, Dan Strauss here with me. And joining us here in the studio now is Maggie Duckworth, who is from Bridgeton, Missouri, and someday wants to be able to say, yes, I'm the one who's on Mars, because she applied a year or two ago for the Mars One program. Let me just tell you a little bit about what that is. I actually talked to the guy who started this thing a little over 2.5 years ago. His name is Bas Lansdorp. He's a Dutch guy who came up with this idea of putting humans on Mars, but not bringing them back. Now, when he first told me about this, I said, I have a former general manager who I would like to send and not bring back if we can do that. And he said, really, only one? I said, well, I would start with one, and then there might be others. But no, his idea is actually to put together a scientific mission to take human beings on that one-way mission to Mars and have them, in effect, colonize that planet. Well, after he announced that in 2013, there were something like 200,000 humans from around the globe who applied to be one of the first humans slash Martians. And Maggie Duckworth is one of those. And now here we are in 2015, and she's still in the running in the top 100. Hi, Maggie. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Paul. Thanks for having me here today.
Is it still 100 that you're...
There's still 100 right now, yeah. They're planning on breaking that down further next year. It'll be about September next year. So I have another year of being one of the 100. And at that point in time, when those groups are selected down further, it's going to be really based off of how well I get along with the other three Martians who I'm going to be spending the rest of my life with.
It's only four people going on the initial trip?
That's correct.
Trip?
It's four people for each trip. And, okay. And so in the first one, there's just going to be four.
Okay. What did you have to do to get to this point?
At this point, there's been kind of 2.5 rounds. Originally, I had to submit a video. I had to write some responses to a number of essay questions that were looking to test my psychological profile, basically. I also had to do an in-person interview, over the phone interview, with the medical director, Norbert Kraft, and he asked some other questions that were also meant to test us psychologically. But I think they also take a look at my background and say, okay, we want to send people to Mars that have got the skills that they need. You know, I'm an electrical engineer as part of my background. But we also want to send people to Mars. They're going to be interesting. And so my other half of my background is that I'm a customer. So I think I've got a little bit of both of those. So those were those 2 rounds. And there was an informal half round where we just have to prove that we're physically fit enough to go to Mars.
Okay. So the people who didn't make it, what was wrong with them?
I couldn't say for sure. Now, Dr. Kraft has actually put out a few videos online that are really interesting to watch. And he talks about what was selected out. And so what they were doing was they were specifically selecting out as opposed to selecting in. They were saying, these people don't meet the criteria in this way.
And we would not pick them up on the side of the highway, so we're not taking them to Mars.
Well, so there's people that are good, that would be good explorers. And those are not necessarily the same people that would be good colonists. But one of the questions that is asked is, okay, in 3 years' time, there's a ship, it arrives on Mars, and it can take you back to Earth. Do you go? And, like, a large percentage of people said, of course I go back to Earth. I want to go back and, you know, shake hands with the president, and I want to, you know, celebrate the fact that we've gone to Mars. And I said, no. I said, I'm going to stay on Mars. I signed up to do this. I'm going to do this. This is going to be my life if I make it to Mars. And I think those were one of those criteria that they were like, okay, you have to be in this group. You have to have that right answer to that question.
Well, you know what everybody's asking right now is why? Why do you want to go to Mars?
Well, in a very selfish way, I'd really like to be known for doing something that extremely awesome. But I think that as the human race, there are a lot of good reasons for us to go to Mars, not just specifically me. I think it's very inspirational. I think it's kind of a chance for us to be, you know, kind of superheroes of the cosmos. We're getting to Mars. We're going to learn all these things that are required to live on other planets so that we can then take those further. And what we learn on Mars can then be applied to, say, going outside of our solar system or setting up a colony on Pluto or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a lot of good reasons to do that, and it'll also help us back here on Earth.
Okay. I asked you to come in here today, not only because I was interested in an update on your story, because you and I spoke in February,
yes,
but also because this Matt Damon movie, The Martian, is a huge hit, but the basis of the movie is we have 6 astronauts who are on Mars, mm-hmm, on our, I guess, third mission there, Ares 3,
mm-hmm,
and a windstorm kicks up on Mars, and Matt Damon is presumed dead, and the others have to leave, or their ship is going to get knocked over, and they'll never be able to get out of there. And so Jessica Chastain and the others lift off from the planet, and they are headed back, and that's the story. except we find out that Matt Damon didn't die in that windstorm, and now he's alone on Mars.
Yes.
While watching this movie, did you go, okay, what if that's me?
Well, first of all, I went to see the movie with my parents. They actually asked me to go, and I kept looking over at them during critical parts of the movie to see how they were reacting. And it was very intense, but at the same time, they're disasters. It's a disaster movie. It just happens to be on Mars. And you look at it all in the same way. Whenever something goes wrong in your life, you have to take stock of that situation. You look around and say, okay, I'm still alive. That's point number one. Mm-hmm. We're good on that.
Yeah.
What do I need to do to keep being alive? And then after that point, what do I need in order to have a good rest of my life?
Yeah.
So you just kind of assess the situation and move on. And I thought that this was a really good movie about that, about how people can look at a situation and say, okay, here's where I'm at. Here's where I want to be. Here's my point A, and here's my point B. And point B is not dying.
Mm-hmm.
And you can make it to that point B against those incredible odds.
And one of the things I admired about the movie is the whole concept of, I have a problem, I have to work the problem. That's mm-hmm. that's all I have to do. I have to take care of this one thing that gets me from point A to point B. I'll worry about C, D, E, and F later on.
Right.
Right now, I got to get to keep me alive, and then what's the next problem?
Right.
But in the movie, he has to do all sorts of stuff,
mm-hmm.
mechanical things. He's a botanist, so he has to grow things to keep himself alive because there's not enough of a food supply. I'm not mm-hmm. spoiling the movie for anybody. I'm telling you essentially what's in the trailer here. And he has to, as he says, I have to science the crap out of this.
Yes, he okay? does.
So could you science the crap out of that?
I think that's something that was kind of exciting for me in watching the movie when I was reading the book, was I read the book before I saw the movie, is I looked at each situation and he'd say, okay, well, here's what I've got going on. And I was like, okay, well, how would I solve that situation? And his solutions were different than my solutions. And I thought that was interesting too. And I'm like, okay, well, what would have happened if I had done that? One of the examples being that he specifically creates water by using the hydrazide and then the oxygen. But Mars has already technically got water on it. There's ice in the soil. So I guess they must have been closer to the equator where they were at. But you could technically go outside and get water out of the soil without having to do that extremely dangerous situation in which he exploded himself.
Mm-hmm.
So those were the things that I was thinking about while I was reading the book as well.
Have you also done a lot of reading up on the science of Mars?
You kind of have to do a lot of reading up on the science of Mars if you're going to think about living there.
I would think so.
You want to research a neighborhood when you're selecting your house. So.
Yeah. So what was your parents' reaction after seeing the movie with you?
Well, my parents and I have a long history of dissecting movies after we watch them, so we spent the car ride home.
But this is a movie about somebody stranded on Mars, their daughter wants to be stranded on Mars.
Yeah, well, the thing is, as I'm going to be stranded on Mars with all the equipment I need to survive for the rest of my life, whereas Matt Damon's character was not left in that situation.
Okay. How is the equipment that's going to keep you alive forever going to get up there?
Oh, we're going to take it up there with us when we go. But for one thing, we'll have food, so that'll be the first problem solved.
But you're going to have to grow some food or develop some sort of system up there. You're not going to have 30, 40, 50 years worth of food
you. And that's actually something I was very surprised about, is in the assumptions that when they were going up there to Mars, is that they were bringing all of their food with them. And of course, they were only planning on staying up there for, I think it was 6 months, but they physically brought all their food with them. And for me, I was like, you know what, it makes a lot more sense to be growing that food if you're going to be there for a length of time, because then you've got that extra bit. You can take a tiny seed and turn it into a full plant. That's really good for weight requirements. So when you're lifting off from Earth, you're saving yourself money there by mm-hmm. doing that. And then you're also being able to take advantage of the energy at the site. You know, on-site resources, we can just use the sun to grow these plants, and then we've got our food.
Okay. But still, it seems like the in the movie, I didn't read the book, but I know in the movie, they also send missions up ahead of time, robot missions.
Yes.
To send a lot of the stuff ahead of time, and it crash lands there. And then when the humans get there, they have supplies on Mars. Is that also part of the Mars One plan?
Yes, that is part of the Mars One mission as well. You have basically every 2 years is your ideal window for getting to Mars. Every 2 years you can launch. It's called a home and transfer orbit. And basically it's when, you know, Earth and Mars are both orbiting the sun. That's that point in time when they're kind of close to each other. We say close, we're talking probably still like 70 billion miles. But still, you know, there's a lot of space that's out there. And you want to get that when they're the closest together that they can be. So you're going to send up a supply mission 2 years before you even are landing there. And that's what we were seeing in the movie, was he was able to go to that next site and use their supplies in order to, I don't want to spoil too much, but that's one of the things that he does.
And that will be part of the Mars One plan, is that you will send up a mission a couple of years before you go, and then a couple of years after you go, another mission would go, or maybe a robot mission would send you more supplies.
And technically, being launched at the same time as the first four astronauts are going to be the supplies for the next four astronauts. The one difference being in that for Mars One, we're all going to be landing at the same spot. It's not going to be a bunch of different spots around Mars. It's all going to be one colony in one area.
Okay. How long does it take to get there?
It takes about 7 months to get to Mars.
Okay. Now, everybody who's ever seen a space movie knows you go into hypersleep. Right?
No, you're awake all seven months.
You lie down in the hyperbaric chamber, and Hal, the computer, if it doesn't kill you, wakes you up as you're approaching Martian space. That's not happening. That's not reality, right?
I don't believe we have that technology at this time on Earth, so it'd be a little hard for us to use it on the way to Mars.
Okay.
No, we'll be awake. So you have to kind of liken it to a seven-month-long road trip.
Okay.
Where the destination is Mars.
So are we there yet?
The answer is no.
There's going to be a lot of that. What month is it? What month is it? Yeah. What year is it?
Yeah.
But there'll also be a question of who goes along that you can get along with. And you talked about the psychological questions and that sort of stuff, which leads to my question for you is, what kind of people would you want to have as the other three members of the mission?
I find myself to be a very logical person. I'm very, very problem-solving oriented. And I think I want to find some other problem solvers there. But I also want some other creative people with me, because I don't want to be, okay, well, we've got our, you know, supposed 8 hours of work each day, taking care of the plants and maintaining the equipment and doing whatever exploration we need to do. But we're also going to have that time to do our own things. And I really want people I can collaborate with. So I can make, you know, art on Mars as well. I can continue doing the things that I already do here, maybe other musicians, so that we could make music together. And then we have, you know, our first Mars culture also coming out of Mars. So I think that would be fun to have people.
What do you mean
that,
your first Mars culture?
Well, you know, anything we produce on Mars is technically be produced by Martians. So we'll be forming the Martian culture up there.
Yeah. See, I would have said scientists and engineers. That's just me. That would be the people I would want to have up there, because I'm not going to know how to do a lot of that stuff. I want to have to have all of them. And by the way, if Jenkins brought his guitar, fine.
Oh, right, Jenkins is going?
You know, Jenkins is disqualified, actually.
Well, you got to keep in mind, we're also going to have at least 8 years of training before we go there. And you can, you know, get a degree in pretty much anything in 8 years. So we'll be able to have people already that know how to, you know, do medical procedures and know how to, you know, do engineering procedures to maintain everything that needs to be maintained.
So what is the timeline now for the Mars One mission?
As of right now, starting in, I believe, 2018, there are missions set every 2 years. One of them being just a demonstration lander, just to prove, hey, Mars One can actually get to Mars.
Let's stop right there. Before we go on with the timeline, do we have the technology to take people to Mars right now? Because 2018 is 3 years.
Yeah, no, that's only 3 years. I think Mars One believes that we do. Mars One believes we have this technology, and I've done a lot of research, and Mars One is right to a certain degree. Theoretically, right now, we can. We don't, I mean, if we put humans on a spacecraft tomorrow, we don't know if it would actually succeed, because we haven't tried some of those technologies. But we have those technologies. We've been able to land relatively heavy things on Mars with Curiosity rover. We've been able to get to Mars reasonably successfully, at least the last few attempts. So I think 8.5 out of the last 10 have succeeded. That's a pretty good track
record. That's not enough for me. I want 11 out of 10 before I'm getting on there.
And you know, we still have missions that are going to Mars that are succeeding today. So there's a lot more technology that is coming in. And every bit that comes into us says, okay, well, we're kind of getting used to doing this. We're kind of getting to the point where we can do this on a regular basis.
Okay, so who is going to do it in 2018? Is NASA involved in this? Is Elon Musk involved in this with SpaceX? Who's sending up whatever the first part of the mission is in 2018?
The first part of the mission is being constructed by a few different companies that Mars One has contracts with, Lockheed Martin being one, SSTL, which is Surrey Satellite Technology Limited, is out of England. They're constructing the satellites that are going to be sent up there with it as well. And Mars One has been in contact with these people. They've gotten contracts that are for different, you know, schematics and stuff like that. Sorry, lost my thought for a second.
Okay.
So they've already got a lot of that underway. Now, Mars One's biggest challenge, obviously, is funding. They have to be able to keep money coming in order to get it. But it's not involving NASA. It's just a group of people that think that they can get to Mars and that are working to do that.
And where's the money coming from?
Money's coming from various investors. Investors would receive kind of a payoff when Mars One's actually getting to
they get to the right yeah. they get the right to your art.
Yeah. That's kind of how it is. So there's a lot of different ways. And also, one of the cool things about Mars One is that anybody can contribute. Anybody could go to the website right now and, you know, buy a Mars One t-shirt, or they can just donate a little bit of money. So it's something that, the entire world can essentially fund.
Is Boz still planning the reality show?
That's part of the investment payoff, is when we actually go to Mars, all those advertising rights and those licensing rights, those will be part of, those will belong to the investors.
Now, I got to say, when I saw The Martian, mm-hmm. and I reviewed it on this show 2 weeks ago, one of the things that kind of was a pet peeve of mine was the scenes in the movie where all the people of the Earth are gathering in Times Square and Tiananmen Square and Red Square and anywhere there was a square and watching what was happening to Matt Damon's character, Mark Watney, and his rescue from Mars and all the other parts of it. I don't think in the 21st century we go to squares to watch that.
Yeah, we sit in our living rooms.
We have a thing in our pocket that gives us the video.
Or pull it out on our phone, exactly.
Or watch it on your TV at home, yeah. Exactly. But I wasn't scoffing at the notion that we would all watch, especially on the first mission.
Yeah.
Because I can remember, I'm old enough to have watched the first steps on the moon in July of 1969, and that brought the entire globe together. You know, we were in the nation stages of television in those days, and it was black and white, and it was snowy.
But now, you could see it.
You could see
somebody walking on the moon.
You could see somebody getting off of the Eagle and touching foot on the moon, and that was stunning. And we certainly would do that again. But with the Apollo missions, one of the reasons they stopped after Apollo 17 is humans got bored. Oh, we're going back to the moon. Been there, done that. I wonder if the same would ever happen with Mars. I'm excited for this to eventually happen because I want to see whether it's you or other humans going up there. I want to see us take that step, and I think we would all watch. But I could also see us all going, what are the Kardashians doing?
right. We've been to Mars, and why do we want to send four more people up there? And that's actually a very real concern. It's once we get people up there, however, if we have people staying up there, then there has to at least be a little bit of interest, because now we've got humanity on Mars and we want to make sure that they're alive and we want to check in on them every once in a while. I don't think it'll have the same impact as that initial landing will. But I think if we do have something established up there and there are people that are not able to come back, people are going to want to know what those people are doing.
Yeah.
I think, you know, 10 years down the line, hey, you remember those people that landed on Mars? Are they still alive? Let's find out.
So if you get picked and you go to Mars, are you going to be here before you leave? Are you going to just max your credit cards out and go crazy? Because they're not going to be able to get you bills or anything up there.
Somebody once asked me about tax evasion on Mars, and I was like, well, I think at the point that I've left the Earth's atmosphere, there's not too much they can do about
that. Yeah, I know.
I'm just thinking about the reality TV aspect of this. Ian, greatest episode of The Amazing Race ever.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the options are limitless.
Okay.
Yeah, but you won't have the money, though. I mean, even if you have the money, you won't be able to spend it anywhere on Mars.
Oh, you're talking about the prize?
Yeah.
Well, see, you could. I mean, we're still going to have to order television programs that we want to watch. You know, we got to get our Hulu subscriptions up there on Mars. And I bet there would be a market back on Earth for some of the things that we learn up there. I think there's going to be some scientific advantage that we're going to make that we should be able to sell back.
Well, that's one of the great things that the space program has brought to us, is all these inventions that are now a part of our everyday life. And I would hope that when we do get to Mars, that would increase exponentially. So 2018, the first robot mission, shall we say, is going to go up there. And then let's get back to the timeline. What happens after that?
Well, after that mission is a success, they're going to start setting up some of the actual equipment. They're going to send up a rover, I think, 2 years after that, that's going to actually start hunting for the ideal landing site. Once it finds that ideal area where that colony is going to be set up, then they're going to start sending the supplies 2 years after that. Then the rover is going to move those supplies so that they're all actually in the same spot, because when you send something to Mars, it's not going to land exactly where you want it to. Mm-hmm. You have enough problems doing that here on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So then it'll collect
Damn,
all those
Apple
things.
Maps told me the wrong way again.
Right. So it'll collect all those pods that we've sent up there, and it'll kind of do some loose assembly so that when we actually land on Mars, we'll pretty much be able to get out of our spaceship and go and get into a functioning life support unit on Mars.
Okay, and when does that happen?
Well, our launch will be in 2026. So we'll be landing on Mars in 2027.
11 years from now, yes. You're planning on leaving the planet forever.
Yes.
Now, let's go back to Mom and Dad and the movie, and you're sitting in the movie theater, and they already knew about this for a long time because you applied for this
several years ago.
What do they think about the idea? What do they think about it then, and what do they think about it now?
Their gut reactions initially was definitely surprise. And since then, I've seen them go back and forth between surprise and being proud of me and not wanting me to do it and thinking it's stupid and thinking it's a waste of time and back to being proud again. So I think the movie was the same journey for them.
Yeah. And how has it been for you? Have there been any days along the way where you said, looked in the mirror and said, Maggie, what are you thinking?
Well, there's been a few days. Usually they're when I have to get up particularly early to go and do a talk somewhere, which was not today.
Yeah.
but there have been times where I'm like, okay, this is going to be a lot of work. This is going to be a lot of effort. This is going to completely change the way that I'm living right now and then that I intend to live for the rest of my life, especially if I do end up launching.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think I've ever not wanted to do it. I've always wanted to do it. Sometimes I just don't want to do the thing I'm having to do right then.
Yeah. Okay, so the next hurdle you have to overcome is probably in the next year or so when they winnow it down to
the
next group?
Their next selection rounds are mostly going to involve a lot of group training. So we're going to kind of be sectioned off into relatively large groups to see how well we problem solve together so that they can select out our individual groups of four.
Mm-hmm.
And then if there's anybody that doesn't seem to be like a good team player in general, they'll be selected out at that point in time. And then we'll get paired up into those groups. And then those groups are going to go through challenges together and we're going to see what the best groups are. So I think their end goal is to have about six groups that they believe any of those six groups could go to Mars.
Well, this is all very, very exciting, and I'm thrilled that you're still in the hunt for this, and I hope you'll keep me posted and come back and talk about the adventure as it moves forward. And
hey, let's plan on 2028.
Yeah.
We all go, and Maggie cooks turkey dinner, and we have Thanksgiving on Mars.
There you go.
I thought you were going to say we could do a live interview. Technically, we can't because it takes 22 minutes for the signal from Earth to get to Mars and 22 minutes for it to get back the other way.
Really?
So I would ask her a question and then we'd have the longest commercial break, even longer than a Landoff commercial. That's how long it would be.
Wow.
But we'll work something out and Maggie will be back with updates on what's going on, right?
Absolutely.
It's a pleasure to see you again.
Well, thanks so much for having me in here today.
Maggie Duckworth, who wants to be one of the first Americans, one of the first humans to go colonize Mars. Remarkable story. This is the Big 550 KTRS.